The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member. And we don't mean your Aunt Dolores.
You stink!
The TNT Shop has it all. At TNTRadio.live. The conversation continues with Rick Munn and Natalie Cheel on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
And good morning to everyone. It is Friday, March the 31st, 2023. And your reminder that it's April Fool's Day tomorrow, so don't get caught out. This is TNT Radio. I'm Natalie Cheel, and I'm here with Rick Munn. Happy Friday to all our listeners. Lots to be positive about this morning. It's nearly the weekend, of course. It's nearly the Easter holidays here in the UK too. And hopefully we're reaching the end of this cold, miserable, wet weather. Although, unfortunately, it's a terrible, awful day here in Reading. But spring should be on the way. The lines will open in about 10 minutes. We'd love to hear from you. If you want to come pick up the phone and talk to us, all the numbers are on our website at tntradio.live, and you can also access our live online chat and have your say and talk to others. I think we've got Anti-Lockdown Alliance already there, so to come say hello. You can download our app as well on the App Store or Google Play and listen on all our major streaming platforms. Lots to cover this morning because the news never stops and we're here to cover it for you. We've got the government net zero policy, gender ideology in schools, more immigration stories. But me and Rick do like to talk, so whether we'll cover it all or not in an hour, well, I do not know, but a quick positive story to start for you, because normally there's so much scaremongering, project fear, doom and gloom. I had a parents' evening yesterday at my son's secondary school, although I'd like to add it was online. Gone are the days, it seems, of the face-to-face online parents' evening. Zoom calls all the way now, unfortunately. But lots of negative press about schools at the moment, but this is a positive, encouraging story. The history teacher said to put out an important message that you need to develop critical thinking skills. There's a lack of it nowadays. That never to trust everything you read, research stories. Could it possibly be propaganda? Who's funding the stories? Who's benefiting financially from it? And she said you need to apply it to the modern world too. She encouraged my son to look at Russia and Ukraine and compare it to the wars in the past and how that's been covered. And she said, don't trust the media and government to tell the whole truth. Keep your eyes open and never stop asking questions. What do you think of that teacher's message, Rick?
I'm shocked, to be quite honest. It sounds like
me too.
Someone from our side of the fence has infiltrated your son's school and is doing their best to subvert the children's thinking to actually think critically and positively. You must have been kind of shocked when you heard that as well, to be honest. Did you fall off your sofa or what? What was your reaction?
I nearly did. I didn't know what to say, and that's not like me. I was speechless. But I thought it was an important message to share here on TNT, and one that we could carry on advocating. So probably
now. But
Nat,
do you not find that as much as schools on the whole are absolutely not a positive environment for children to be in, there are still some absolute diamonds out there that are still teaching in schools. And I think in their own way, they're trying to kick back against the system as much as they can, but they're very, very constrained. But fair play and a salute to all the legitimate teachers out there who actually do give a damn about the kids. And they're trying as best they can, Natalie, to push back against this wave of woke that's in, flooding the classrooms.
Yeah, and it was a bit of a story of hope, really, because so many people were so upset about what's going on. It's a reminder that there are good people out there, you know, putting the right word out. And, you know, that wasn't just saying it to me and my son. She was putting that message out to everybody on the online parents' evening. Brilliant. So that's something really positive to cover. And I think it's now time to say hello to Darren Denslow. We will just keep get a quick pause and introduce him.
Breaking down the headlines.
It's the news I trust.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hello, Darren. How are you?
We got Natalie leading today. I was all surprised. I've got to say this. Why won't it just stop raining? just for 5 minutes.
I know.
Please. This is really, really depressing, isn't it?
It's supposed to be spring.
I know. I know. It's been actually the wettest month in March since records began. That's how they normally report it, isn't it? It's been very, very wet. And I suspect we'll run out of water in the summer. So, and they'll forget all about this rainy March. Anyway, to my story. Sorry, I'm rambling on. Brazil and China have just signed a pact to abandon the dollar. The two BRICS nations will now reportedly trade in their own currencies. Beijing and Brasilia signed an agreement on trade in mutual currencies, ditching the US dollar as an intermediary. The two BRICS members plan to expand cooperation on food and minerals and other commodities, and the deal allows direct exchange of the renminbi for real, which is the Brazilian currency, and vice versa, reducing costs and facilitating investment. Now, people often refer to the Chinese currency as the what yuan. I actually had to go and check to see what the exact difference was. And the yuan is just a unit of the renminbi, which is actually the fifth most traded currency. China's also going to set up a clearinghouse, which will provide settlements without the US dollar and lending in national currencies to reduce transactional costs. And the People's Bank of China announced that the arrangement will boost the usage of the renminbi of cross-border transactions. And actually, there are now 25 countries who have ditched the dollar so far. This has been a rapid ditching of the dollar. We're expected to see maybe more of this, because the other story that I provided was coming from Saudi Arabia, who have signed documents with the state, giving them status of dialogue partner, which is like a semi-full partner to the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, currently chaired by China. It's another organization similar to BRICS that was started by China, Russia, and some of the ex-Soviet states like Kazakhstan and Tajikistan, and it's also got other countries like Pakistan and India and Turkey and Sri Lanka and other countries that are dialogue partners, and they are very much focused on security, terrorism, as well as trading. In addition to this, I'm trying to get as much as I can in quickly. Saudi Arabia have been in discussions with Iran. We've had Iran diplomats arrive in Saudi Arabia to discuss economy and security arrangements, which has almost been unheard of in recent times. They have been sort of arch enemies. They're different sects of the Muslim religion. And this, again, has been facilitated by China. Now we've got Saudi looking to like to becoming a part of this SCO, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. And they're making sort of, they're having conversations about BRICS, which is Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. Now, if that happens, and Iran also has requested to join BRICS, then we have got the world's largest economies, one of the world's largest militaries in Russia and China, and we'll have most of the oil-producing states all part of this BRICS organization, and guess which reserve currency is going to get ditched? It's going to be the dollar. And when the dollar gets ditched by a country like Saudi Arabia, who is effectively, with its resources, propping up its value, the Americans are going to be left with a big pile of worthless paper, Rick. Natalie?
Well, when I read this first story this morning, I thought, well, could this be goodbye to Western dominance? Because, I mean, it could possibly, and it'd be an implosion, a complete implosion of the global economic system. You know, is this looking like moving towards a crash of the system, America not being the superpower that they once were, if the dollar's not the main currency being used? Could this be a push for CBDCs? What's your thoughts, Rick?
Do you know the picture I'm getting in my head listening to you per talk at the minute and thinking about this? I've been thinking about this all week, ever since I believe they're seeding this into people's heads now, the imminent decline and ultimate collapse of the dollar. So making the point clear, it's not just going to fall over overnight. It's not just going to go to zero. It's a slow, steady decline. You ever remember watching those wildlife programs when you were a kid about packs of lands, or like a tribal lands, okay, a pride of lands? clans, actually, they're called. So there's always a big dominant male who's in charge, right? The women, the females are the ones that actually go out and do the work and hunt. You know, they're actually responsible for the killing, etc. But this big, tough male walks around, broad shoulders, baring his fangs, roaring from time to time with his huge mane. That reminds me of the dollar in the world currencies. However, as time goes by, the old male lion gets a little bit weaker and his roar is a little bit less powerful and he isn't just so fast anymore and he maybe loses a few teeth, and then a younger, more dominant upcoming male will come and eventually oust him from the pack. The old guy will realize he's not the king anymore and he'll either step aside or be torn to shreds by the great young pretender. And as you both are talking, as I'm thinking in my head, that's the picture I'm getting. This old, long-time dominant male lion is actually being pushed out now. He's losing his fangs. He's lost his roar. He ain't so fast anymore as this BRICS confederacy or conglomeration comes together and is effectively pushing him out. Are you seeing that, or is that a reasonable take on it?
That's exactly what's happening. We are seeing a slow transfer of power from the West to the East. But what's also happening with this SCO, with BRICS, it's not just the economic alliances that are being formed. They are also, it's like the rest of the world is coming together and going, you see the USA? They ain't in charge anymore. But they've got this extremely powerful military that's all they'll have left to fall back on to maintain their dominance. And we need to form alliances economically and militarily in order to confront them when that old lion, who's lost some of his teeth, but he's still got a bite in him, is going to come back, make one last attempt to claw onto his hegemony, his power, scrabble some of that wealth back, try and scare people into backing down. And all of a sudden, they're going to find Russia and China with all their little friends behind them are going to say, nah, we are the new young lions on the block. Your dominance is over. Final comment is, you said, America's been around, you know, they've been the world power for ages. Well, they haven't. Not really in the scheme of things. I know what you meant, but it's only since the 1940s, really, that they've been considered the superpower. We forget that that's only 80 years, one generation. Their time is up.
Yeah, I think so. Now, do you think their days are numbered?
It looks very much that way. I mean, you think like the G7 so-called superpowers. I mean, I wonder, you know, they push all this climate change, we know, like in Agenda 30, and there's different thoughts about with the BRICS nations where they're pushing. So it's very interesting to kind of think about the future. If the dominance is going to be those BRICS nations, are they completely on board with the same control and message, or are they not? There's lots of ideas and people have got different opinions on that one. So interesting moving forward to where we go for the future.
BRICS as well, it's worth noting, has a very wide geographical spread. Okay, so you've got Brazil down in South America. You've got Russia way out in the east. You've got China way out in the east. You've got India kind of somewhere in the middle, and South Africa right down at the bottom. So it's an intercontinental, a merger, if not a merger, but you understand what I'm trying to say. Yeah. Whereas America's just been plopped on its own, isolated by the Atlantic and the Pacific. Yeah. But here we have this BRICS beast rising up, if you want to call it that, if you want to get all eschatological on it. It's rising up and it's intercontinental, and they're coming together. And there are other nations that won't make it into that little inner circle of BRICS, but they will be very, very happy to ally themselves to that merger because they will also benefit from it as well. And don't forget, over the years, my friends, America has made a lot of enemies, on the world stage.
I was
going to
say the same.
And I think there's a lot of places rubbing their hands together. It's like the old school bully when he finally gets his nose broke. There's a lot of kids sitting back that are going, I've been waiting to see that for a very, very long time. So not wishing ill on any nation or anything, but absolutely, there's a lot of other people going to be riding on the back of BRICS going, What do you think?
A lot of other nations and leaders that will be quite happy to go against any American resistance or revolution against the BRICS, most definitely. I think it's about time, unfortunately, Darren, to say goodbye. So we'll he'll be back in the next hour with Rick again.
He will. But
I hope you have a lovely weekend, Darren. And we'll speak
Angie,
again
Natalie.
Next week. Okay, and we'll have
speak to you in a minute.
Speak to you later. Bye. We'll have a couple of just a quick break, and then me and Rick will get back talking probably about schools again, as we started on that subject and gender ideology here at TNT Radio.
Joe Biden has staffed the American government with people just as mentally compromised and unqualified as he is. Case in point, Interior Secretary Deb Haaland. After being confronted with the fact that America doesn't have the raw materials for national defense and EV production, Deb Haaland was completely clueless, as the Biden administration instead makes us dependent on communist China. Hear the incompetence for yourself. Coming up on the next Chris Salcedo Show on TNT Radio.
Let's take advantage of the freedoms that we have while we have them to advance the kingdom's objective to be salt and light.
Freedom is hard. Election security involves you, involves the voters.
This election for people of faith is vital that we see a change, because the war against Christians is at an all-time high.
Transparency is the key not only to having honest elections, but to maintaining public trust in those elections.
Our ability to vote is not being withheld from us. No one's trying to stop you from voting.
The one place the American people can have a say is at the ballot box. That's why the Democrats and the far left are working so hard to get rid of all election integrity.
We cannot let our elections be anything but transparent. It is at the very heart of freedom in a free society.
And if we lose America, I mean, it's all over, because the world has looked to America for hope.
Free and fair at salemnow.com.
TNT Radio wants to hear from you. Call Rick Munn and Natalie Cheel now.
From the U.S. and Canada,
call 1-888-201-6425.
From the U.K.,
call 033-0024-1026.
And from Australia and New Zealand,
call 1-800-670-310. Free speech is alive and well on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
And welcome back. Yes, the lines are now open, so please give us a call if you've got any political rant. We would love to hear from you. We'll move on to, again, to the schools and gender ideology. There are two stories that I highlighted in the Daily Mail. One is about the school record system in the UK. The management system ESS Sims is used in thousands of schools across England, and apparently it will now allow teachers to add pupil pronouns, and students can identify as, you'll have to excuse me while I'll try go through these pronouns, they, the, z, e, or e, z, I, e, s, I, e, e, y, or e. I don't know what they mean, Rick. Any idea?
Absolutely no idea at all what they mean. And I'll be brutally honest with you, I did do English at, you know, GCSE. I got good grades, English literature, English language. And when this whole business started a couple of years ago about pronouns, right, if you were to actually ask me before all this, Rick, what's a pronoun? I'll be brutally honest, as an English-speaking man, I had no idea. I couldn't tell you what a pronoun was. So if the trans movement has done nothing else, it's educated me a little bit as to what a pronoun actually is. It's a descriptive term, he, him, she, her. I wouldn't have known that if it wasn't for the trans movement. So thanks, guys, for doing that. You've furthered my education a tad. But as to these other terms, I don't think they're English words. I'll just spell them because you pronounce them very nicely. But one of them is Z-I-E, Z-I-E. Another one is S-I-E, S-I-E. Another one is A-E-Y. And another one is simply E. Now, at a push, I have a pretty good imagination. I have a pretty active imagination. How could you like, if you were to say to me, Rick, I'm an E, as in a capital E, I'm sorry, but I would hit a brick wall. I'm like, what's she talking about?
But even if I understood what the term meant, have you ever actually tried to change the pronouns in the middle of a sentence? I can't even manage to do it even if I wanted to. And really, my main point about these kind of gender decisions, who is actually the person or political party that's decided that this is appropriate in schools? Because it is really an ideology, and in that sense, more of a religion or a following. Yeah. So who has been the person to decide that our schools should be following this pronoun party? You know, because I've never heard anything of you.
And they change so often too. You know, people could change and say, well, today I'm a he, him, and tomorrow I want to be a they, them, and maybe next week I want to be a she, her. Do they keep updating the records literally on a weekly basis? Because what happens, Natalie, if you have me down as a he, him, and then next week my maths teacher says he hasn't done his homework, and I'm like, no, I'm a she, I'm a Z, I'm a Z, I'm an E. Then could I not take the school up for misgendering me because they haven't updated the records? Are they going to have a full-time person sitting in the office typing like a maniac, changing all the pronouns on a weekly basis?
Maybe that'll be another staff member just updating pronouns, like you said. But it kind of moves on to the next article also covered, because there's a report out by the Conservative think tank Policy Exchange suggesting child welfare is in danger from gender identity theories in school. And it's claimed that parents may only find out that their kid has transitioned or using different pronouns after it's happened. So teachers are letting pupils change their names or uniform without parents or professionals being alerted, and abandoning single-sex toilets and changing rooms. Self-ID policies may mean parents discover their child has transitioned only when they receive a letter citing their new name and pronouns, it has claimed, which is quite worrying, don't you think?
It is. There's a case happening in Ireland at the minute. It's been ongoing for quite some time. There's a teacher called Enoch Burke who was part of some Christian school in Ireland, and he refused to acknowledge a pupil's new... He refused to use them, not so much acknowledge them, but he refused to use them in class. So he was suspended. It went to court. It's really ongoing, and it's developing into something quite something else. But what has came to light over the last few weeks is the child in question, okay, the parents didn't even know that that was their child, because the school hadn't informed the parents of the child's decision to change their pronouns. So this is happening in a lot of schools, whereby it's being kept within school. Now, if your son was at school and he fell and cut his knee, or he split his elbow and he needed some stitches, the first thing the school would have to do is they'd have to phone you up and say, Natalie, sorry, your son's had an accident. We've had to, can we give him a paracetamol? Can we put a sticky plaster on his arm? They have to ask your permission for that. But when it comes to the child speaking to the teacher saying, actually, I want to be changed, I want to be known as a girl, but please don't tell mom, don't tell Natalie about this, the school would be like, no problem, it's our little secret. And what does that sound like to you if it's not grooming?
Yeah, and it sounds very much like the message that famous Geoffrey Marsh was putting out, you know, you don't need to tell your parents about anything about your identity, just go to another adult, come talk to me separately on Patreon. And, you know, that's happening in schools. I can't see another issue, you know, I'm 40 years old, in that time where they were saying keep things secret and segregated from your parents. It seems a little bit crazy to me, because they are the parents' children. They're not the school's children. There Correct. Seems to be something moving towards the government. Almost the schools are saying that they are their children and they are there to look after them and not the parents. And again, have we ever agreed to that? Has that ever been signed? Have we signed our children over to the school and the government?
Nope. But they seem to think that they have carte blanche. They seem to think that they have this innate power that they can do that. And you know, as I said, with anything to do with a child, especially a child at primary school, when you think of a four-year-old, a five-year-old, a six-year-old, nothing can be done concerning that child without writing to the parents. If the child wants to go on a school trip, like I remember, you know, when my daughter was going to school, we would like to take the children to the zoo or to the mountains. Do we have your permission? And if they go, there'll be at least four teaching assistants and they'll cross the road and everything. They'll be counted and all this. Super safety. But when it comes to this, to do with your child's identity and sexuality, all of a sudden it becomes, shh, don't tell mom and dad, we don't need to share this with mom and dad. That's isolating. And you know anything about abusive relationships, you know the first thing an abuser does is try and isolate you or someone else from their loved ones, their family, and their support circle. And this is an indirect move to do that, is it not? Isolating a child and their sexuality in the school from parental knowledge, is that not what they're doing?
That's exactly what they're doing. And I can confirm, I used to work in a primary school. I used to be on the duty at break and lunch where you had to then phone in afterwards and had to phone parents up to confirm that they were allowed to wear a plaster. If there'd been a head injury, you know, I mean, the slightest knock to the head, you had to leave emergency messages on people's phones. But like you said, if it's anything to do with gender ideology, then that's not a problem at all. The parents don't need to know. So, you know, Rishi Sunak here has said that he's going to put out new guidance in the summer for all schools relating to it. So it would be very interesting to see what he puts in that. And let's hope it's more positive and in better for the child's welfare than what we're looking at the moment. Looking at the time, it's now a couple of minutes for the headlines. And then me and Rick will be back here at TNT Radio after.
I got a newsflash for you. Newsflash!
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boylan here with your TNT headlines. The UN has accused the European Union of aiding crimes against humanity in war-torn Libya. Finland will be formally admitted into NATO in July after the Turkish parliament greenlit the country's application to join the Western Military Alliance. Outrage is growing in the US following news that former President Donald Trump has been indicted, and Saudi Arabia has become the newest dialogue partner of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization.
Our lines are now open. Call Natalie Cheel and Rick Munn now. From the US and Canada, call 1-888-201-6425. From the UK, call 033-0024-1026. And from Australia and New Zealand, call 1-800-670-310. Free speech is alive and well on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back. The lines are in fact open, and I'm Natalie Cheel. I'm here with Rick Munn. Have you got any pressing stories or issues that you'd like to discuss, Rick?
There's another few things. We'll not labour the point in this because I think we're going to touch on this frequently when we do these shows, Natalie, pretty much every day. We'll have to keep this in the spotlight. But Rishi Sunak did highlight, he showed pictures. There's another article where he was showing pictures of gingerbread men. He was very concerned. Gingerbread men. It's not going to be long before gingerbread will probably be deemed offensive for all the ginger people out there. They may take offense saying, well, why don't you call it a blonde head man or a brunette head man? Why is it the ginger people always get the hard time about this? They're probably going to be next.
Rick, have you not seen some supermarkets have taken a gingerbread man has been stopped in most supermarkets? They're called gingerbread person. So, you know, it's going to be racist soon, I'm sure, to boot the ginger. So I don't know what they'll be called after a while. Multicolored
there is a day,
person or something?
There is a day, apparently. I need to double check this, but it's called Hug a Ginger Day, where, you know, ginger hurt people. And I mean, I have no problem with ginger hurt people. I think they're great. I couldn't eat a whole one, though, but I think they're great people. But there is apparently a National Hug a Ginger Day, and they walk around, ginger people walk around with t-shirts going, hug me please, I need some love. Now it's tongue in cheek, obviously, but at the same time, you know, they do get the thin end of the wedge. So between the misgendering of the little bread person and the fact that they're ginger as well, you have a recipe, no pun intended, for disaster when it comes to wokeism. They're mixing gender and gingerness. I think the sooner we get rid of gingerbread people, the better.
But I actually I like the taste of them as well. Were they going to change the taste of them as well? Because it's got ginger in it, isn't it? You know, that could be offensive to some people as well.
It's too much ginger, but too much ginger. I don't mind ginger biscuits if they've loads of dark chocolate on them. Ginger and dark chocolate is a wicked combination, but a big lump of ginger on its own, I'm not so sure about that. It's a little bit like ginger people, right? Some of them are a little bit ginger and they're not too bad, but some of them are like orange ginger with like curly, thick curly hair, and it's like, hey, too much ginger, too much.
pushing the boundaries of ginger racism today, aren't you, Rick?
I am joking, by the way. I have a lot of ginger friends. I don't have any, actually, but I'm just saying that to cover my own ass here now.
Yeah. We have to, don't we? I've got lots of trans friends and I do have lots of black friends, but I can't say I've got lots of trans friends, I'm afraid.
It'll cover you in case you get a libel case against you. We're friends with everyone on TNT Radio. And by the way, we are joking. Who would have thought I would do a little bit of ginger bashing this morning? But who knows what's on the cards? You asked me what else I'm seeing here. Well, there was a post put up yesterday following on from Humza Yousaf's appointment as the new First Minister of Scotland. So obviously he's been busy when he hasn't been praying in Bute House with his buddies and hanging over the Scottish coins. There's these medals that he was posing, hovering over them in his full national dress. He said, "I'm delighted to appoint my cabinet and ministerial team. We will work to deliver a radical," don't like the sound of that, "ambitious and progressive policy agenda for the people of Scotland." And then he goes on to add a funny little statement. He says, "For the first time, the cabinet has more women than men." And then there's a picture of them standing together. There's 10 of them and a right motley crew, I might add. You will be hard-pressed to find worse than is Yousaf Humzaf's cabinet. So there's six women and four men. And let me say this, I don't give a damn what the makeup of his cabinet is. If they were all women, nine women and him, or all men, I couldn't care less as long as they're doing the job right. So why does he have to feel the need to throw in the old, there's more women than men for the first time ever? So what? The question is, can they do the job?
Well, exactly. I don't care how that cabinet's made up. I don't care what race they are. I don't care what religion I are. I don't care what gender they are. But he certainly seems to be pushing all these new kind of woke agenda division, doesn't he? He was, even before he was appointed, he's a massive fan of Sturgeon's gender policy. So it's not a surprise he's been pointing that out. And I think he'll continue to do so. He seems already to be quite a provocative character, doesn't he? You know, causing division, particularly in Scotland and elsewhere. I think that's what he's trying to do.
I think it is. Now, I don't know, and I'm just saying this, I'm holding my hands up, I don't know a lot about the Muslim faith, Islam, etc. But what I would have thought was that somebody who's a practicing Muslim, because of, you know, their own Sharia laws and one thing and another, they're very, very restrictive on what women can and can't do, and certainly with regards to what children can and can't do. I would have been surprised to see a Muslim First Minister. I'm just saying this. This is just my thoughts. It's not a criticism. It's an observation. I would be very surprised to see a Muslim First Minister of Scotland pushing a trans agenda, especially for children in primary schools. I would have thought that set somewhat at odds with his personal faith. And let's be honest, if you're a devout, practicing Catholic, Protestant, Buddhist, whatever, you do tend to stick to your beliefs, I would have thought, over your political persuasion. So I think it's going to be difficult for him to separate that in his office, Natalie.
Well, yeah, I wonder how he can. I mean, it's funny because we saw the picture of him, didn't we, that he put of him praying in the Scottish Parliament building. Mm-hmm. But there were no women in that picture, was there?
No.
So, again, it's a little bit of hypocrisy. So, as you said, he's going to add it where he can. And then when he can't, like, because that would have caused uproar, I'm sure, in the Muslim faith, having the women praying in the same building. But again, I don't actually know much about it. But that seems to be where he's going, following with Nicola Sturgeon. And I think it's reducing the age, isn't it, from 18 to 16 in terms of being able to identify or change your gender legally is what he's pushing for, which seems quite a strange thing in this day and age to be pushing for when you've got all the problems with the economy and crime going up and what other people are worried about, to be pushing that as the thing that you want to have for your Scottish National Party. I can't see many of the public are that fussed about that particular law being placed, do you?
No, he could be a real stinker of a Scottish First Minister. You know, let's face it, he hasn't been elected anyway. The Scottish National Party are more and more despised and hated, actually, by the day as time is going by. So he could almost be like inheriting, you know, the Titanic. He said, OK, we've got a job for you as a newly qualified captain. We want to airlift you onto a boat called the Titanic. It's already hit an iceberg. It's already halfway underwater. People are leaving it in droves. But hey, the captain's job is yours. Maybe it's an engineered move to put the final nails in the SNP's coffin for something more sinister to come out.
As you said that, I instantly thought of Liz Truss, who obviously, as we know, was put in place as a scapegoat to bring down the government in that situation. And she's now blamed, as you know, for destroying however many years, you know, she's 20 years of the British economy, and Liz Truss ruined it all in 2 months. So I wonder if this is a similar power play here.
Yeah.
Has he been put in to discredit the Scottish National Party and cause more segregation there to ensure the division stay in place?
Because it's very hard, as you know, when you put something on the internet or you say something and somebody records you saying it, it's there permanently. There's a permanent record of your words and deeds. And there's an infamous speech from him a few years ago. It's just a fact. He stood up in the Scottish Parliament and he viciously led into the fact that there were too many white people in positions of leadership, too many white people in positions of power, too many white people in positions of government. And that's fine. You can make that observation. But it was said with quite a lot of venom behind it. You know, it wasn't said in a factually informative way. It was said in a, I have a major problem with this kind of way. And that was the first warning signs about this chap whenever he first made his debut, or he started talking out about this, that hang on a minute, there could be a little bit of a race issue going on here. That's just a widely held belief based on what he said and what's out there in the public domain. So definitely on the one to watch list, I would have thought.
Yeah, I wonder if we can keep seeing the stories coming out in the media about him and what they're pushing, because very soon, if he is the new Liz Truss for Scotland, I think we'll be seeing a lot more divisive stories coming out for the Scottish public to hate on him. Because that we can normally analyse that pretty quickly when the stories are coming out. And so far, from what we've seen, they're not positive at all, are they?
No, they're not positive at all. So one to watch. He's in the one to watch category. So we've covered off a little bit of politics there, mixed in with a little bit of diversity. Everything's about politics and diversity. What else have you got up your sleeve this morning?
Oh, well, why don't we move to net zero and climate change and the environment. The government in the UK has unveiled a new net zero plan, which has been met with intense criticism, apparently, from experts and environmental groups. I'd just like to add, I was reading from the BBC there. So obviously their view is that the new government existing plans will not meet sufficient targets for climate change. And they need to push it even more, apparently, to the BBC. And they need to be doing even more. A central plank of the strategy is to store CO2 under the North Sea, but ministers say it also aims to lower people's energy bills, although this will not be achieved in the short term. And in terms of those energy bills, they want to set to change subsidy rules as part of the net zero strategy. And what they want to do is basically move everybody to electricity for the long term, from what I can see, and get rid of gas. And they're trying to push heat pumps for people to use instead, but they will come at a cost. Is it 13,000
grand.
Apparently that's going to be what they want to push to the general public, the government. It's okay. You know, go out, get out a new heat pump for £13,000, and that is good for the climate, and that's going to save you money in the long run. But how many people can afford £13,000 in a cost of living crisis at the moment to worry about those energy bills, Rick?
Well, here's the thing. With a lot of these green policies and Green New Deals, okay, there's massive subsidies involved, okay? So people are getting kickbacks as a result of this. So solar panel installation, even buying an EV in some places, the installation of these new so-called energy-efficient heat pumps, who can afford the 13 grand? I don't know anybody even that has 13 grand that would want to drop it on a heat pump for their house. So what the government will be saying is, okay, there's subsidies involved, so you won't take the full cost of that. We'll pay you a little bit. We'll pay you to upgrade your insulation. We'll pay you a little bit to do this. There's always an exchange of money involved that doesn't involve you and me. It involves the government plus contractors that probably have spurious
their
links with the government.
Well.
Yeah, so that 13 grand, it's like Natalie ain't going to pay that. Maybe she'll go to 5 grand or 6 and we'll subsidize 7 into the pockets of the heat pump installers. And boy, would I love to do a forensic audit on all the contractors and all the money that's being paid to contractors to see have they any links in with official sources. Just think PPE here. Think about government ministers with shares in either, a YouGov like Nadeem Zahawi. He founded YouGov. They did all the government's polls. There's another one called Ipsos Mori. Now They Die. That was originally linked in with the Gates Foundation. They're paying all, they're doing all surveys, etc. It's a big exchange of money between wealthy, wealthy people. They get richer, we get poorer, and thus must it ever be. That's their business model.
And would it be subsidied and them saying, oh, you will only get this if you make sure you have a smart meter? I'm sure that will be entwined in within the deal to be pushing towards smart energy and climate change and Agenda 32. 32? I've just put 2 years on the agenda. Well, you never know.
Not?
It depends how the plan's going. Agenda 30 even. So we'll be back in a couple of minutes after this short break.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
On Monday morning came word of the shooting at the Convent Elementary School in Nashville, Tennessee. 6 people slaughtered, including 3 9-year-olds, by a biological woman who attended that school and identified as a male until she was shot to death by police. In other words, the shooter was a trans. And as the Daily Wire reports, the shooting came the same week that transgender activists had promoted a day of vengeance. They say the group, which is run in part by a former Democratic staffer from Virginia, also raised money for firearms training and specifically called for action in Nashville, the city where the shooting took place. The main Day of Vengeance event is scheduled to occur in D.C. on Saturday, when attendees are asked to show up masked at the Supreme Court. The webpage promoting the event, the Trans Radical Activist Network, says the time is now, and it quotes a participant in the Stonewall riot saying, I remember when someone threw a Molotov cocktail. I thought, my God, the revolution is here. Let's hope, folks, that the DOJ and the FBI are on top of this and will shut it down before we see more death and destruction. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
In fiscal year 2019, 2,800 pounds of fentanyl was seized at the US-Mexico border. The following year, 4,800 pounds was seized, and in fiscal year 2021, seizures totaled 11,200 pounds. The figures indicate fentanyl seizures under Biden quadrupled since fiscal year 2019 when Trump was in office. Fentanyl is primarily flown from China to Mexico before the Mexican cartels traffic it across the southern border. Only a fraction of fentanyl trafficked across the border is seized by Department of Homeland Security. The Center for Disease Control, CDC, reported that more than 100,000 Americans died from drug overdoses in the past 12 months, and 2/3 of those deaths were linked to fentanyl.
You're with Natalie Cheel and Rick Munn on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back. So we'll move on to the story of King Charles. We touched briefly upon this yesterday. He does like to get involved, doesn't he, in politics and share his opinion, whereas his mum didn't seem to want to do that. She kept out the way. But you highlighted this story yesterday. Patrick Henderson shared it on Twitter yesterday. The disbelief as Green King Charles gives royal assent to a new gene breeding technology. What are your thoughts on this one, Rick?
Well, this is interesting. This goes beyond even just the meddling in politics and giving his views on things that he shouldn't be normally expected to give his views on as part of, you know, royal protocol. You know, one mustn't give one's views on this, that, and the other. But he is. And not only that, but he's now going a little bit further than that. He's giving royal assent, as you've rightly highlighted, to new gene breeding technology. This doesn't just apply to plants. It also applies to animals. When I was a kid, the one sort of image I had of Prince Charles, you always seen him hanging over a gate somewhere in the Highlands of Scotland with his trusty dog and his kilt, the pervert, and a big hooked stick, okay, talking about the environment and we must protect the planet, blah, blah, blah. Now what he wants to do is he's effectively saying a big FU to organic farmers, okay, and bringing in royal assent to gene-altering technology for growing crops and animal breeding. So not only is he overstepping the boundary with his own self-imposed protocol, but he's also going against what he's been banging on about for the last, what, 50 or 60 or maybe even 70 years with regards to, you know, organic this and planet that and hug a tree here and kiss a duck there. He seems to be done a U-turn on this one. I wonder what could have caused it. Do you think he's highly compromised and they're about to drop a laptop on him or what?
So it seems a bit odd, doesn't it, that it follows the same plans from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and what Bill Gates' plans for the future of everyone is. As we know, he doesn't want organic farming taking place. He wants everything to be happening in labs, and apparently that's going to save us all and the planet. That's what we all need for the future, isn't it, Rick? To be eating.
Well, it is, but here's the other interesting part in this, right? Europe are very much trying to exert an influence on Britain and whatnot, but ironically, and I'm reading the piece here, by the way, from Patrick's website, which is 21stcenturywired.com. It's really cool. We actually had a met him on Tuesday night. We did a broadcast together, then we went out for a bite. We were talking about this, actually, down in Belfast. But one thing interesting is this piece of legislation will, for the time being, be unique to the UK, as such animal and plant biotech deformations are not allowed in the EU and many other countries. So despite the fact that the EU is desperately trying to exert its influence on Britain, even they don't stoop that low as to meddle with biotech in this form. So this will be actually unique to the UK, and given the old rubber stamp, or the, you know, the wax and the reds, wax and the old signet stamp of the king himself when it comes to this business. I think it's a very odd story. And who knows what else he'll get meddling in this year. It seems to be he's fond of meddling.
And let's be honest, do you really think that King Charles himself knows that much about biotech technologies? You know, like, do you think he's done his research? And yes, he's put royal assent on it, but I can't imagine he's gone and investigated before he's done that himself. You've got to wonder who's that coming from? Who's telling King Charles to back this? And where are all his political opinions coming from?
Well, you know he's allowed, again, he's got a lot of flack about this one too. He's very much a pusher of the Great Reset. He's made no bones about it. And there's a very telling speech that he made, actually. It wasn't last year, it might have been 2021, where he stood up at one of those COP conferences and he said, listen, there's a new government, world government coming in, and someone's going to step up and lead it. And then he actually said an interesting thing. He said, it won't be any of us. He said, this is way beyond our scope. This is not something that, with all due respect, that we're capable of doing. He says, there's going to be, and he referred to the person as he. He says, when he takes to the world stage, he will lead us all going forward, which was very interesting. And you know my beliefs, I'm a Christian, I believe in the Bible, and it all lines up. A lot of stuff's lining up with end times prophecies, etc., the rise of an antichrist, or the formation of a one world government led by this one person. So interestingly, a lot of people picked up on that, even unbelievers and atheists or whatever and said, that does kind of fall in line with this whole business. So who knows? Who knows who he was referring to? He could have been referring to Prince Edward. Maybe he's going to rise up like a meteor from utter obscurity and lead the world. Maybe he's the Antichrist. I don't know. But I think it's like everything else. Time's going to tell, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And his motivation, of course, he's led this life of luxury and real luxury, even more so than most elites in the monarchy, for a long, long time. And he's going to want to keep that. And if he can see there's going to be changes to the world, financial collapse, which many are predicting, I'm sure he's going to agree to do his part if other people are agreeing he can keep that wealth, no doubt.
And you know, think of his age too. You know, as sort of don't want to give old Charles, old wing nut too much air time here, but think of that guy's age as well. I think he must be pushing, you know, he must be in his mid 70s at least. The same as Schwab, all these old people, George Soros, you know, they're all old duffers. You would think at this point that they have made enough money, they've exerted enough influence, they would just want to chill out and enjoy whatever little time they have left on the planet. But no, this business of absolute power corrupting absolute. And when you love control and money, you can never have too much of it.
Stop.
Are these people not just proof of it? They just won't let it go. They have to keep hanging on and squeezing for more and more and more. Is he not a perfect example of it?
Oh, absolutely. They also got the secret of the adrochrome. And are they actually knowing they're going to live a little bit longer? Who knows? But they are certainly showing the signs of that kind of narcissistic, sociopathic type behavior where you never have enough. And you keep looking for that more and more power and control over people, sadly. Well, I think we've just about got enough time to cover one more story. You pointed out one from the Daily Mail in Australia, exactly where will Australia's 650,000 new migrants live as the nation's housing crisis deepens, with skyrocketing rents and locals being forced to live in tents? We've talked about immigration a lot, particularly in the UK and in Ireland, but obviously there are problems everywhere now with immigration, isn't there?
Yeah, well, you look at those figures for Oz, okay? So this is one for you, all you Aussie people out there, all you lovely Aussie people out there. 650,000 immigrants expected to arrive in just 2 years. You know, that's a lot of people. The population of Australia is about 28 million, give or take, as far as I know. So you're pushing up towards a million people by the time 3 or 4 years goes by. That's a large percentage of the Australian population. And Oz is somewhere that I would have loved to have went to in the past, but the one thing that puts people off going there from the UK is the distance. Not a lot of people want to get long haul flights or connect in Japan or however it is you get to Australia. So the question is, if I wouldn't want to go there as a paying tourist, you know, I sure as hell wouldn't want to try and make my way there as an immigrant. I'm sure there's other places closer to where I live that I could be going to. There was a chap yesterday, there was a brilliant video that a guy over in Ireland did on an army barracks. He, a great investigative journalist piece, he interviewed this young lad who was walking up to the barracks. He just had a conversation. He said, "Where are you from?" And he goes, "Afghanistan." And he said, "How did you get here?" And he said, "I walked." And he said, "Well, you couldn't walk from Afghanistan to here." He said, "I walked. I walked through Turkey. I walked through Belgium. I walked through France. I literally walked until I could walk no further. Then I got a boat across to Ireland." That's how keen people are to get to certain places. So the question is, if people are making that pilgrimage to Oz, there must be a big pot at the end of that rainbow for them, or some form of financial incentive. Why else would you go there?
Well, that's why people are doing that. They want to better their lives. And that's what I always like to point out about the immigration. You know, you can never blame the people who are actually making those journeys, because I think most people in any situation would do that. You want to better your circumstances for yourself and your family, so you can't blame them to do that. But I would say that it's the long-term plan, not just for Australia, but for everywhere else. It's not sustainable, is it? Just this constant immigration, because that, you know, there isn't the monitoring, there isn't the finances in these countries. So why is it being pushed so much? Why is it being advocated? And like we said, it's happening all around the world. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, definitely to better yourself is one of the reasons. My dad immigrated to Australia in 1968, actually, with three other friends, and they were very well-paid plant fitters. But my dad was fond of a drink and a little bit of a flutter on the horses at the Melbourne Cup. So he ended up blowing everything and coming back home after 2 years with his tail between his legs. But I understand, yes, why people go. This case, though, is more to do with, I think, fleeing from threat and death of persecution rather than making a clean go of it financially. And in that respect, it's a long journey to make. But yes, it's happening all across the world, Natalie, and nowhere is nowhere is exempt from this influx of people coming to make a better life.
And it does make me think that is the idea eventually, we keep talking about One World Health Organization, One World Government, is like a One World digital monitoring mm-hmm. of where people are living with it, mm-hmm. ID with it. And is that why they're so keen to allow mm-hmm. such movement between countries at the moment?
Uh-huh. And the blurring of boundaries as well, and the blurring of culture. So, it's all under the brawley or umbrella of diversity and inclusivity. And whilst I firmly believe in respecting other people's culture and respecting other people's beliefs, I don't necessarily want to adopt them for myself, but I respect your right to practice them. So these cultural boundaries and lines are being blurred all over the world as well by this mass influx of various cultures into various places.
Yeah, well, it needs to work logistically and economically, and right now that isn't sustainable. But we no doubt will be talking about this next week and the weeks following that, because it comes up every time. But it's time to leave. It's my weekend can start now, Rick. But you can carry on, and he's on for Locked and Loaded for the following hour. But have a lovely weekend, everyone. And I will see you on Monday on TNT Radio.